Welcome to the Last Horror Podcast. My name's Christopher Brown. Fresh from the success of Diary of the Dead, George Romero takes a similar pool of money and a little more of it this time, $4 million, and pretty much plans to make another film straight away. Survival of the Dead being what it is. Riding the quest, the crest of a wave of excitement and interest in the zombie genre, and using his name to find funding, Survival of the Dead marked a point where it looked like, even in this later part of his career, Romero would be able to create a number of low-budget, small films around the zombie genre, and kind of play out the twilight of his career. That isn't what happened in the end. Survival became Romero's last film due to some poor to mixed reviews and the fans kind of saying enough was enough. It's a shame. What it does is, though, points to a Romero who still has lots to play around with and has a lot of still elements in terms of what he wants to say. If you haven't seen the film since you watched it back in 2009, I'd suggest maybe, go back to it with an open mind. Survival of the Dead is a film with its problems, but certainly it's a lot better than a lot of the normal director Vigio De Ross out there.
Last time anyone counted, 53 million people were dying every year, 150,000 every day, 107 every minute. It had become an us versus them world. All we were looking for was a place where there was no them.
Lousy times make lousy people.
All the wrong people are dying.
This island needs to be rid of them.
We like it here. We think the best way of seeing this through is here.
We don't want no place. We want some place.
Like where?
Like an island.
It's an island off the coast of Delaware. Come on over.
The only families ever lived on this island were yours and mine. No strangers.
What are you gonna do with them?
They're Muldoons. It's up to me to save them.
You can't save a person who's already dead.
Somebody's gonna find a cure for this.
A beautiful place to live and to die.
Will you give me some more bullets for this gun?
We gotta get these things to learn to eat something other than us.
Even with this small budget, a budget which means that the film was shot quickly, but also and a lot of the gore was added in afterwards using CG, and it's quite visibly being added in using CG. Regardless of that, Romero actually, in a kind of a grandiose statement, believes this film to be certainly apparently one of his more melancholy films, but also a bit of a his own take on the Western epic, The Big Country. Now that sounds a lot grander than it probably is in truth, but you can see where he's coming from. The story is about two families basically at war with each other on an island, the Flynns, the O'Flynns, and the Muldoons. These two families have, over seemingly generations, have kind of almost hidden themselves away from the world with their, kind of thick Northeast American Irish accents, and have attempted to kind of almost live a very simplistic life by their own rules on this island. Their life is is always in a heightened state of disagreement, regardless of a zombie apocalypse. But this zombie apocalypse kind of gives them a refreshed and renewed reason to become even more lawless than they were before. Joining a catalyst and our entry into this world proper is a group of people called National Guard members, who we, the group that we see, and it's mentioned already in Diary of the Dead, who have become famous already because their film with them, Robin and those kids in Diary of the Dead, had been uploaded to the internet and watched thousands and thousands of times, which kind of made their lives incredibly difficult. So as a group, regardless of the fact that they were looters anyway, they are now on the run and trying to find a space where people don't know who they are. This Plum Island, which the two families live on, appears off the coast of Delaware, appears to be the solution for them, therefore. Indeed, the two families who are at war would very unlikely have had any chance of like watching documentaries on the internet, being so keen they are and arguing all the time. The film itself follows a fairly standard zombie idea of the zombie plague is being managed far better on this island than elsewhere. National Guard members, including Sergeant Nicotine Crockett, are able to deal with what comes gets thrown their way relatively easily. But this core disagreement that sits in between the two families is not only dangerous and cancerous for them, but also for the wider society. And in the end, you wonder at what price the world for their own petty disagreements. Okay, so independently produced and distributed by Artfire Pictures, which was the people who did Diary of the Dead. The film was shot in Ontario and Toronto. Sorry, Port Dover and Toronto in Ontario, Canada, and it features an entirely Canadian cast and crew. This cast and crew, you know, it's very much based around, you know, tax breaks and trying to get the most bang for your $4 million buck, which is not a low amount of money, but certainly enough that, you know, it has to be shot quickly. So Romero's solution to that is effectively the same solution he has for Diary of the Dead, which is shoot it, green screen, and then deal with it afterwards. The difference between Diary and Survival, and one of the key reasons why the fans rejected it so vehemently, was that whereas there was limited OTT gore effects in Diary of the Dead, just enough to kind of give it a bit of venom and vumph, Survival is very much reliance on its gore effects to add a bit of pep to the story. So we see flare guns being set off in zombies' mouths and various scalpings and heads being blown off, but all of it done on a computer. Now, the arguments about horror and CGI is well documented, and people tend to reject it outright and kind of say, well, it looks like shit. Now, that's less true now than it was 10, 15 years ago because of lighting and colour grading, and things can look far more realistic now than they did, you know, what was in 2009. But Marrero wants to kind of give you the big bang shock effects. He wants to kind of, you know, smash, you know, show the zombies getting torn apart by the violence. So it makes it harder to make it more realistic, and indeed, due to the budget constraints and the technical elements, he struggles to do that. And the film suffers from as a result. And of course, there are a huge amount of people who watch Romero films for the gore. So from that point of view, it is a failure. This is a far more simple film than a lot of Romero's other stuff. And I mean that in terms of the themes. Romero is really only interested in this film about how pettiness and war in tribes can lead to a breakdown in the fabric of society way beyond anything that an existential threat could. Now, we've spoken about this, you know, key narrative idea that he touches on again and again in his zombie movies, but particularly in Day of the Dead, where the groups of the scientists and the army bicker and moan and complain their way all the way through the issues that they face, while simultaneously hit a point where they are ignoring almost the zombie plague that's above ground. Day is loved, of course, because they had 4 months to film with Dan Finger, spent so long on the gore effects with Savini working so hard on them to create, like, you know, real over-the-top appliance-based masterpieces for himself. But those themes are actually the same themes that sit within survival. These two warring tribes of men are effectively willing, and indeed do, almost kind of are willing to let the entire world burn and be destroyed rather than admit they're wrong. And there's a telling scene at the end of the film where, two people who've been, you know, battling from the start are still fighting each other, but as a zombie now. What I would also say is that's kind of it in terms of the themes of the film. Its feel of Western is almost playful. I know he's described, you know, Romero called it his ode to the big country, obviously another film about warring tribes in the West. And its tone, it plays tonefully, almost joyfully with Western tropes, but in a modern zombie setting. It's almost harder to believe, therefore, that Romero was Romero's world of zombies tearing each other apart is probably more believable, maybe, than some of the family dynamics of these people who seem to have, you know, got an island away from Delaware and seem to be living as if it's the 1880s still. A simple life with horses, and, you know, you get, and the zombies of this world are ones that seem almost doomed, although able to eat flesh, but also doomed to kind of repeat their lives and their actions of the past. So we have postmen who just go around putting post in post boxes, and a woman who loves to ride horses, being a zombie horse rider. These repetitions of life and in death, hint to a part of the world where and a certain mind process that as humans we are ultimately destined to just continue to do the same things again and again and again. There are elements, therefore, of Romero's wit and fun kind of touch, but for me, and probably was picked up at the time, it feels very much that Romero either was running out of ideas, or perhaps more likely just didn't have enough time for those ideas to percolate into something more interesting than to touch upon the story again of war and tribes, and the fact that as people listen, or to themselves, they're in monologues in their own, you know, tribal inwardness, they're unable to reach out and come up with solutions, and that will be the thing that curses us all. Now, again, that's something we've spoken about before, in truth, isn't it? And I'm struggling to, you know, I can make Brexit, you know, mentions, we can talk about climate change and all those things that Romero echoed and alludes to right the way from, you know, the 60s through to 2009. His concerns that human nature is so embedded in its own hypocrisies and prejudices that it isn't able to move beyond what it wants to be. It's probably a response, therefore quite a bleak, and I know he calls it melancholic, But Romero doesn't actually give any real solutions for any of this time. In the past, he'd basically say, well, you can always just make off and get off and go. And indeed, in this one, some of our characters decide to do just that, that this island isn't for them, and they'll find a different home somewhere else. And the classic solution, and this sits in, you know, Martin, when, you know, he always seems to respect the people who look at the circumstances and just leave. You know, Martin, or the end of Dawn, or Day. You know, it's not good enough. Everyone's falling apart. Just go. And he repeats that there. But in this case, because his characters aren't people you really root for, indeed, you know, Sarge, Nicotine Crockett, played by Alan Rahn-Spryng, is probably one of the villains, really, of Diary of the Dead. What it does is kind of creates an almost kind of thing. You know, there isn't quite the glimmer of light that he normally kind of pushes through, which kind of makes it all a bit depressing. But that's okay. Zombie apocalypses can be depressing, I suppose. There certainly isn't the light that you would hope, you know. So there's a shame, really, because the film itself, therefore, only really offers more imaginative ways to off zombies, which is not good, because obviously we've already said that offing of the zombies was rejected by the gore fans because it was obviously done on a computer. It didn't look real, it looked cartoony. So the theme is clear, but the various warring factions leave you with little to hang on to and people to root for. The film itself, therefore, is reasonably unloved. And that's a shame, but also not that surprising. What the real shame, therefore, is that this obviously marks the end of Romero's cinematic run. He does other stuff afterwards. He, you know, puts his name and produces different films. He writes a comic book called Empire of the Dead for Marvel, which is 15 issues, which sits very much more in the Land of the Dead size and scope and scale of stuff. But again, you know, if I'm being honest, it could have done with another editor on there kind of toning up some of the writing and recommending to him that maybe, you know, he didn't, you know, he did, well, you know, change some of the plot strands, made it a bit different. There was a chance there would be more sequels, and because of this response, it kind of never really happened. Which obviously is the biggest tragedy, because now he's gone. There'll be no more Romero films, regardless of quality. But it's not that surprising. The film struggled to, you know, cost $4 million and struggled to find an audience. There's another film potentially in production with Matt Berman, serving as director, called Road of the Dead. Whether that happens or not, who knows? And of course, there's other stories now of various bits and bobs that are sitting in the archive, ready to be released. Stuff that George has created in the past, the scripts work, obviously, but also, you know, apparently there's even a 1-hour film called The Amusement Park, which was made in the 70s, which hasn't seen the light of day. Now, I know that the estate is trying to get the funding together to get that released in a decent quality. For me, it doesn't surprise me. You know, I feel like my entire life there's been Romero films that have just been out of reach and just I couldn't quite get hold of a copy of. Whether that be, there's always Vanilla or, you know, or the longest version you could have, The Season of the Witch, back when it was Jack's Wife, you know what I mean? It always feels that there's just something else, just about touch and distance, and, you know, unfortunately you're never able to quite get it. So the fact that there's this film called The Amusement Park, which apparently is brilliant, doesn't surprise me at all. And that it could or may not see the light of day. As I say, they're asking for money to do to get the cash together to release it. But whether or not that actually happens, God knows. Because the George A. Romero Foundation has basically just kind of created a page that says, give us money. We'll try and make this movie, whether or not you know, it's not quite Kickstarter, is it? Just pass the pot round and we'll get this film into the real world. Anyway, it's about an elderly man, and I think there's elements of age discrimination as a theme, and it's hard to say. Apparently it's good, but it never saw the light of day because it was a bit grim. But who knows? So yeah, so Survival of the Dead marks the end of Romero's, you know, from our point of view, from what we're doing as director and writer. There was bits and bobs, there's Dead Time Stories, which is crap, but it was like an anthology, but really just an opportunity for young people to kind of, you know, put their shorts together and you know, get a stamp of approval from George and kind of, you know, get them seen by the wider world. And now the foundation as well is apparently as okayed a theatrical version, a theatrical as in the theatre version of a stage version, to say, of Night of the Living Dead as well, which at some point will be out in the UK. So on July 16th, 2017, George Romero died in sleep following a brief but aggressive battle with lung cancer. He was a heavy smoker for his life. Apparently, they had played the score from one of his favourite films, The Quiet Man, as he died, and he was with his family by his side as well. His legacy, I suppose, is huge. I mean, you know, he invented the, obviously, as we've spoken about numerous times, he invented the modern zombie film. He created satirical, interesting, and challenging works. And I think the thing that's most telling, regardless of his impact on people like Edgar Wright, John Carpenter, and Robert Kirkman, who obviously made the Walking Dead series, which is the most notable high-profile thing that is almost directly influenced by, well, is directly influenced by Romero's work. You know, various artists and films and beyond zombie movies have been intrinsically influenced by him as a filmmaker. Goblin owes as much to him as they do to Dario Argento for you know, maintaining their visibility over the years. For me, I think the reason why he is still has, as Romero called himself, a shelf life, that his films go beyond and still talk to us, is because that they speak more about people rather than zombies. So while the, you know, he may be notorious because of his gore in his films, particularly in Dawn and Day, really what I've tried to do in this seemingly never-ending series of podcasts is to really focus more on what he is as a writer and the themes that play through all his work in terms of what he tries to say. So I might as well finish, therefore, on Romero himself, in his own words, speaking to AMC about his films around about the time when Survival came out, actually, and why he thinks that his films, although maybe not the biggest selling or great big box office smashes, were still, nonetheless, loved. The question is it because your Dead series is more about people than zombies? He says, yeah, and they're about how society doesn't listen to anything. People are not learning. We haven't learned squat. We're still fighting homosexuality and abortion. Give me a break. I thought we were past that. But it's about how they have this disaster. It's zombies, but it could be a hurricane. It could be anything. Zombies are just more fun. And the response or non-response or stupid response, people are still shooting at each other instead of addressing the problems. That's the most fun for me, making fun of that. People ask, could zombies take over? Not in my world, because I need people. I can't make fun of zombies. They're not liars, they're not cheats. We sit around and bullshit all day. They're us in an altered state. Or maybe not so altered. So cheers, George. And thanks for being a huge influence on me and really opening my eyes to horror over the years. Okay, well, that's it. Right, so plans and things, you want to get hold of me, please do. My email address is christopher@thelasthorrorpodcast.com. You can go to the website, thelasthorrorpodcast.com, where all the podcasts are on. You can go me on Twitter, it's @orange_monkey. You can get me on the website as well. I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. Oh, email christopher@thelasthorrorpodcast.com if I mentioned that. Okay, so yeah, tomorrow, if you're listening to this on Saturday, or today, if you listen to this on Sunday, or this weekend of the April the 14th, I'm running the Mersey Tunnel 10K for Northwest Cancer Research. So if you want to give money to the podcast, don't. Give it to that charity instead. The link is on my Twitter page. It's @orange_monkey. That'll be great. So I need to do some planning, but the plan is now that there'll be one more podcast on this feed, which kind of introduces season two of Video Nasties podcast. And then section three of the Video Nasties podcast begins in reasonable earnestness soon, around Easter time. Well, that's next weekend, isn't it? Oh, fucking hell. In May, so. It'll take me a couple of weeks. I need to come up with some kind of rough idea of a plan in terms of what order I'm going to tackle them in. I've seen them all. I know what I'm doing, roughly. Although there's some gaps in terms of knowledge, but we'll get to that. It's no different. I mean, no worse situation than I was when I did the first season of Video Nasty, so we'll be fine. And try and get some of the elements back. I haven't got the background music anymore, I don't think. I think that's gone. I can just cut and paste the old... theme tune from one of the old podcasts, because obviously they're still all up on the site, so we'll sort it all out anyway. I'm not overly rushed. I'm probably going to do Shogun Assassin first, because that's a good excuse to watch that film again. I haven't watched it in ages. Tell your friends. I'm really sorry this season has taken I think the best part of a year and a half, maybe, to cover 16 films. Fucking hell. Never mind, eh? Anyway, let's put that to one side. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope I was able to kind of really deep dive his Romero stuff and kind of give it a bit more praise than maybe, you know, it people normally do. He's so, you know, Romero's so thematic and has certain things he always wants to get across that they're quite good to kind of real break down. And then obviously these ideas and themes and concepts crisscross throughout his entire career. I mean, he's very much got something he wants to say, and he's very, very willing to keep on saying it, which I suppose is part of the problem with survival, if I'm being honest. You know, it's like, you're talking about this again. But with CGI zombies now, fucking hell. But anyway. As I say, I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. It was a good excuse to rewatch those films. Anyway, that was just something I've been wanting to do for ages. Next episode is going to be a kind of introduction to the section three list of the Video Nasties. If you're not listening to the Video Nasty podcast, you can do. That'd be really good. But you don't have to. It's not like it's a continuation by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, I haven't listened to any of those podcasts in years. So, it's like 5 years ago when I finished doing that. So we can kind of rediscover these films together a little bit. And totally, I'm sure it'll be different because I'm different in terms of, as a human being, I'm different. So, you know, I'm sure the podcast will be different, but you know, we'll get onto it when we do the intro, but each film will kind of cover the film rather than the scare, which is how the podcast used to work, and occasionally drop some stuff in. But as I say, I'll explain all that when we get to it and kind of refresh. For those that did listen back in the day, refresh your memories about how the podcast used to be. Anyway, until I go back to that well, take care, and I'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.